Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about why green tea is so important in our diet, how there's hidden dangers to tattoos, what you can do to spring clean your cells to keep them working smoothly. It's called autophagy. We're also going to look at how a lot of older people and vegans are deficient in vitamin B12, and what that means, how you can change that, what to do if you have metabolic syndrome. That means high blood pressure, obesity, high cholesterol, high triglycerides. Yeah, we can deal with that. And if time permits, I'll go into some other issues, but these are all from major journals. But also today, a commentary on, can we appreciate where we're at and being led into the Great Reset, not great for us, great for those in power, but at the same time, understand that there's a historical precedent for this. So I'm going to give you a history of how we got here, an honest history. I don't use politics or I don't use anything except the truth. I'm not here to sell any type of ideology. Also today, there's been a lot of controversy surrounding ivermectin. Earlier, last year, it was hydroxychloroquine. And the mainstream media has done everything within its power to try to convince you that it's not only worthless, it's just, you know, horse serum. Look at Joe Rogan. That fool took horse serum. Well, he didn't. And he pushed back. And good that he has a gigantic audience that was able to confront Dr. Gupta, who was one of the people sitting on a panel when this was being discussed about Joe Rogan, how irresponsible he was. So he pushed it back. But still, that's he said, he said, he said, he said. And the media is saying, and the media is saying, and the government's saying, and the government's saying. What's the truth? Today, I'm going to share absolute scientific proof that ivermectin works, and the campaign against it is a campaign orchestrated by the pharmaceutical industry and the deep state and sponsored by the media to lie to you. What's their intent? Why would they? You can save lives. And since they know that what they're doing are lies, could we by any measure of reasonableness suggest that at least 85% of the people who could have been helped, not even go to the hospital, save them from death, could we say that this represents a major crimes against humanity, the largest in America's history, against the most individuals? Now, I doubt that anyone will ever be held accountable. That's not how our corrupt capitalist system works. But shouldn't we at least consider it? So I'm asking everyone in this audience, the only way that we can have our power is to say no to them on everything, everything, the cancel culture, everything, say no. You want to believe it? That's your right. Don't tell me that my right ends with your right superseding my right. No, then we got conflict. I don't want to see conflict. But we now have nothing but conflict because there's only one right, corporate right, government right, media right, and everyone else is wrong. So share the video I'm about to give to you today. It is dry as a bone. It is pure science. It's worse than any class I ever attended when I was getting my doctorate. So, but it's not long, it's 10 minutes, but you'll see all the graphs, all the charts by one of the leading people in Israel, professor, medical doctor, government consultant, and he's at the core of everything, and he has the truth on ivermectin because he did what no one said could be done or has been done. A randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial. He did that. So you didn't know about it, did you? Of course not. But today you will. Download it. Share it with everyone. This is the truth you're getting, and that's not the only one. We're loading up all of the other studies on ivermectin, showing you that it works. All of them. Just go to pirin.fm and scroll down to where it says the notion. You can watch that in real time. Also today, we're going to hear from Robert Kennedy Jr., just a small part of him saying some things you probably did not know that are important that you do know, to protect your freedoms. So that's that. Also, I'm going to give you a history of why we need to say no. We, the people, the populace, not those in power, not the ruling class, not the professional class. They're the problem. So I'm going to give you that commentary in a few moments, just after health. So you're going to have some very interesting things to watch today, and all of it challenging everything the people who are misguiding you are doing. Here's my question. After you hear the commentary, after you see the professor telling you the truth, after you see that two of the most vaccinated places in the world are in Ireland, 99.7%, and yet they're coming down with COVID. They've all been vaccinated, and yet they're coming down with COVID, massive amounts. What does that tell you? You've been lied to. But first, the latest on health and healing. And the first thing up is that when it comes to understanding why we age prematurely and why different diseases occur in the process that we really shouldn't be suffering from, because we must separate out the diseases of what we call aging, such as dementia, loss of memory, loss of muscle, loss of vitality, loss of libido, loss of cognition, loss of strength, endurance, and stamina, aches and pains. Now, those are not normal to the aging process, but they are common to the aging process because of how we age. We've been aging wrong. Interesting, I just got an email today from one of the world's leaders in anti-aging medicine and science. In fact, he's probably the top person right now. And when I find his email, I want to read it to you. It's short, but it's something that we don't appreciate, that we could be aging differently. We could age without the aches and the pains, keeping our skin, our hair, our muscles, our libido. We can have all this. Here's what it says. Quote, "Congratulations, Gary. This is a dynamic study, an important paper, and had COVID not hit, it would have been a massive interest to all. It still will be when all this insanity passes. Again, my best regards." And then this is from an MD and a scientist who is one of the heads of the largest foundation involved in anti-aging science. He read this scientific peer review paper that was published based upon all those studies I've been doing. I got four more papers in the works now because there were five studies. That was from the first one. But the world doesn't know about this. So one part of this aging process is, think of it this way. Let's make it really simple. I believe that it's very important to start the day by doing something that shows that today our standards are going to be kept high. No laziness. No, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to, you know, get out of my comfort zone. You make your bed. I even told someone this morning. I called someone and I said, I just want to see if you're off on the right start. This person's morbidly obese and is starting a program to get back into shape. And I said, how'd you make your bed today? And it was, I got out of bed. That's how I make my bed. No, why don't you go back in and make your bed as if everything else in your life is going to be measured against how you made your bed. Why? Why is that important? That's not important. That's stupid. You may think it's stupid, but when you make your bed and you make it really well so you can bounce a quarter off of it, then you're starting your day by showing that you can do things at the high end of quality. Now, that means that instead of going for the sugar-coated cereal and some milk in the morning, you're going to make some millet or quinoa or some other healthy grain, put in some fresh fruits, or make yourself a healthy smoothie. You're going to be conscious that what you're doing is bringing everything about your health up to a higher level. Okay. Or you can drive off to a McDonald's or one of the other places and buy some the food that they believe you should have, though I'm using the word food liberally there. You can have an interesting conversation. Or you can have a junk conversation. You can do a good exercise. You can do a junk exercise. You can decide not to be creative, not to be caring, not to be spiritual. There was a film that was just on, a series, interesting series, kind of a metaphor for how desperate people would do desperate things to entertain those who are rich and bored and extremely decadent. It's a South Korean series that's been very popular. But in the very last scene of the film, the man who was really behind all of it, and I won't give it away in case you want to watch it, is very violent. But there's also a message of how much of a person's humanity are they willing to surrender in order to get money? And here's this old man in bed with a clock ticking. And he said, I'll bet you anything that you still trust, and I don't. You see across the street, there's a poor man freezing to death. In another half hour, he'll be frozen and dead. Watch all the people walking by. I'll bet you anything, nobody will stop and help him. The man looks out, and he sees the man across the street. And sure enough, people are walking by. Nobody's stopping. But the man hasn't lost faith. So he takes a bet. And then you see the clock ticking down the 5 minutes. And just at the last second, ambulance pulls up. Someone had called. The man was helped. End of story. That we should never surrender our hope that we can find that measure of humanity that may not have been on full display, maybe not in to the enlightened state of the spirit, but is still capable of coming alive when it sees the truth and can no longer hide behind illusions, conditioning, propagandizing, can just simply be honest in that moment and care about others, irrespective of what their race is or ethnicity or income. And that's kind of the metaphor, the larger overarching metaphor, but it also would apply today to our lives. So just imagine that whatever you start the day with, you're going to carry that forward the whole day. Every choice you're going to make it as if someone is watching you, and you're being watched by silent witness to say, are you making the right choice? Are you making the choice you need to make, should make, can make? More often than not, the answer is no. We're not going to make the right choice. And hence, as I said in my 7-hour webinar on Saturday, I said, we're not all going to make it in the boat. Probably 90% won't, because they're not living an authentic life. They could, but they've allowed their conditioning, they've allowed their own hubris, they've allowed their lack of wanting to get out of their comfort zone or to question authority or to even to question their own values and beliefs. They don't want to do that. But those who are willing to do that and see that there's a greater sense of capacity to solve problems, resolve problems, help other people, they will go forward. Now, mind you, historically, it has always been the empowered minority that helps the disempowered majority. Always. So just keep that in mind as you go through the day. When you start to say something, do something, is this what you want to be remembered by? By what you just did? It's a philosophical approach. It's a very Zen approach to life. Now we go to the cell. In your cells, you have constant 24/7 nonstop biochemical, electrical, magnetic energy, and you create life. But life has byproducts, and you've got to get those dead cells out, the senescent cells. So research has shown that during times of intermittent fasting and caloric restriction, when you're being very conscious about what am I eating? Am I eating too much or too little? Am I eating the right things or the wrong things? That you're giving your body the nutrient and the energy to help activate what is called autophagy in a normal course. So as you live, you're creating life, but as you breathe, you're creating carbon dioxide, you expel it. And so as you live, the cells have to be cleaned also. So this autophagy is one way to keep your body younger, longer. The protein mTOR, acts as a nutrient sensor. And when caloric intake is too high, that's your average diet, and nutrients are abundant, mTOR is activated and shuts off autophagy, inhibiting excess TOR activity. On the other hand, it can lead to increased autophagy removal of cellular waste. Said differently, a constant consumption of calories denies aging cells the ability to clean house via autophagy. So when you fast for 12 to 15 hours, most days you can facilitate autophagy. So you're intermittent fasting, having your last meal in the evening and not eating until mid-morning. That's terrific for helping get your nutrients in and get your debris out. And you have what is called AMPK, is an activator of autophagy. Stimulating AMPK has been shown to improve metabolic health. Therefore, diabetics, people who are overweight, people who have excessive abdominal fat, all of which are going to lower your life expectancy. That's a part of this. Intermittent fasting and restricting your caloric intake to what really is good calories. You can eat an apple, or you can have a teaspoon of sugar. Let's say you got the same amount of calories in both. One is going to be causing an acidic environment. One is going to be causing a continuation of diabetes and obesity, tooth decay, and candida overgrowth in your intestine, which leads to bad breath and foul-smelling body. The other, an apple, with all of its hundreds of phytonutrients and fibers, it helps cleanse and rejuvenate. So just an overview. Let's keep our cells clean on the inside, not just our skin clean on the outside. Autophagy is a process where the cells are using this to remove old and damaged parts and replace them with new ones. This helps keep cell clear of debris, youthful, and fully functional. With age comes a decrease in autophagy combined with an increase in accumulated damage and accelerating the aging process and increasing the risk of many chronic illnesses. Scientists have identified two nutrients that can stimulate autophagy. The flavonoid lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N, I repeat, lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N. And there is another one, I'll spell it for you, Piper, P-I-P-E-R, Longuim, L-O-N-G-U-M-I-N-E. And that's, by the way, the second one is isolated from the long pepper plant. So those two nutrients can really help you. And working in overlapping and distinct ways, these nutrients can help to maintain cells clear of debris and functioning to promote better health. So, simple things, but with profound outcomes that we all need to pay attention to if we want to keep it. And why? Because we all go through a process of senolytics. And what you have to know is autophagy enhancers and senolytics, it's a powerful pair. Cellular senescence is a major contributor to the aging process. Senescent cells have become old and dysfunctional, but refuse to die off to make room for new, healthier cells. Compounds called senolytics, S-E-N-O-L-Y-T-I-C-S, can remove these harmful cells from tissues. One effective senolytic approach is a weekly combination of quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, theoflavins, T-H-E-A-F-L-A-V-I-N-S, and apigenin, A-P-I-G-E-N-I-N. Together, the quercetin, theoflavins, apigenin, they work in a way to make the fistin and the bioavailable. So using these senolytics and nutrients that activate autophagy is a way to help fight aging. And autophagy helps to keep cells healthy and potentially functioning a lot longer. So let's say you got two people who are 85 or 83 years age, because I have two friends, older friends, who are 83. They're both in pretty good shape. They both are pretty conscious of their diet and supplements. One is extremely conscious and exercises. So he may be 83 chronologically, but I'll bet anything if we took a DNA sample, he would be around 50 biologically. So that means that the other one, who is not as concerned about the nutrients and doesn't have as good a diet, he does exercise, but that's it. He is 83. He's probably around 78 biologically. So even though they're both the same age chronologically, one will probably live to about, I'm going to guess right now, about 110 in good health. The other one probably to around 95 to 100 in less than good health. They're both much better than the average person at that age. But this is where autophagy, if they both practice it the same way, they would be able to stimulate a lot more brain activity. Why? Because lutein protects your brain and body. Lutein belongs to a flavonoid group, a plant nutrient, and is found in several fruits and vegetables and herbs, broccoli, parsley, and thyme, the T-H-Y-M-E, the herb. And lutein has been shown to both increase AMPK activity and inhibit the mTOR signaling. And the cumulative effects is that autophagy is activated and cellular metabolism is improved. So your metabolism improved, your blood pressure comes down to normal, you're burning more body fat, you have more energy, the cells are rejuvenating themselves faster, especially if you're using NAD and PPQ and L-carnosine and resveratrol. So, in fact, in one study, and cell culture studies also, using lutein showed to protect the brain, the heart, and different cells. So you're far less likely to have a poor brain, and it reduces inflammation. And when you reduce inflammation, that's a big factor in helping the brain. But also, the Piper longuium keeps cells youthful. And again, it comes from the long pepper plant. And like lutein, it's been shown in animal and cell culture studies to activate autophagy by inhibiting the TOR signaling. And it encourages autophagy. And so both of these things can make a big difference. Something you probably have never heard of. Might be a little confusing initially to understand. But I've taken more time here, over 20 minutes, just to let you know that there's no reason that you should be aging prematurely. If you just understood, clean the outside of the body, brush your teeth, floss, wash your mouth out, but always remember you have a biome in the mouth. So by eating healthy foods, not highly acidic foods, you're able to keep your biome in the mouth, your biome in the intestine. You're able to keep good bacteria on the skin. Simple things. Hygiene for the inside, hygiene for the outside of the body. That's the latest on health and healing. I'll get more on tomorrow. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, I just want to give you a little lesson that I believe is important to understand why we are in this feeding frenzy today. It's like there are at least 2 million great white sharks, and they're all looking for blood in the water. And guess who's the blood? You and me. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. Remember, this program is a forum to see if it can empower you with additional insights and information. If it does, great. If there's something there that you can benefit from, use it. If not, come back the next day. I'll have more. There are five individuals who, more than anyone else, caused the problems that we're seeing today. These five individuals are Saul Steinberg, Michael Milken, who's still alive, T. Boone Pickens, who died 2 years ago, Carl Icahn, he's still alive, and Ivan Botsky. I don't believe he's alive. Each one was responsible, in my belief, of causing much of what we're seeing today in the need for greed. It was originally called greenmail. how that worked is, I'll give you a gross overgeneralization. Let's say you had a very profitable company, as most companies sought to be profitable. They abhorred debt, especially coming out of World War II. Interest was low. The unions were beginning and gaining power. Those that had been around but had been struggling now had more authority. They were engaged in collective bargaining, and that brought up the entire working class because they had people who were there to fight on their behalf. You didn't have the kind of child abuse slavery that you once had. But the individuals saw an opportunity. Take advantage of companies. How did they do that? They would invest enough in the stock, maybe up to 5%, and that would get them a seat on the board. And then they started recommending stuff on the board, like, let's sell off these divisions. Let's move this trademark, keep it here, but move the factory overseas. Well, this scared corporations. After all, some of these corporations have been around for 100 or more years. They had a standing within the community. Most of the people in the community worked at this company. That was certainly the case where I grew up in West Virginia. Most people worked at any one of 10 places. And those jobs would be jobs you could have your entire working life. That was being jeopardized. So people would give them money to go away. How much do you want? Go away. Okay. That was the beginning. And then we got into other forms. And all those other forms, corporate raiders, but then it evolved into something that is just a phenomena to watch. And that is the equity partners. I'll give you an overview of how it works. Let's just say that you have a company that's been around for 100 years and you employ 500 workers at a good wage. And they have a living wage. They have health care. They have their entitlements. And they're a solid part of the community. And you got a thriving, you know, community. Everybody's employed who wants to be employed. Got good schools. You don't have high crime. And that's how it worked for a long time. But in comes someone who says, okay, your stock is now at $20 a share. We're going to give you $30 a share. And then we're going to even make everything better for the company. Well, unless you know what these people are capable of or have done in the past, you may think, well, that's a good deal. What? And so the stockholders who have to be served, that's part of what the corporate charters are about, serve the stockholders, says, this is a good deal. Let's take it. So let's say it's one of Mitt Romney's or Henry Kravitz's, one of these other equity partner barons companies. So they'll come in and they'll give a small percent down, 5 to 10% maximum, and then they use other companies, other Wall Street firms, or GE Capital, one of these, as a bridge loan. So it starts off really as debt. Now they have controlling interest. And then let's say the company was making, just for argument's sake, $15 million net at the end of the year. Okay. They take that, all of it. They take every penny they can take. They squeeze this orange until it's dry. The average life expectancy of a corporation that's been taken over is generally around 6 years and 3 months, and that's actually getting shorter. Think of Circuit City, Linens R Us. Linens and Things and Toys R Us. Think of Macy's. Think of all these major corporations, Sears and JCPenney's, that once were bedrocks for quality products, many of them made in America with lots of good paying jobs. They're all gone. They've changed hands. And now the biggest risk is, can a company survive by servicing its debt? And here's the game they play. Virtually every penny of profit that comes back is taken as consulting fees by those, you guessed it, those equity partners. So then they start getting to a place where the product is no longer of value, so they then sell off all the parts they can because it's worth more by parts than is as a whole. They lay people off. The people running this whole operation get all the bonuses. They get they will take every penny they can. And now the same product that was made for 100 years in the United States, that gave everyone a living, that helped the community stay alive, it's now being shipped off to India, Bangladesh, Haiti, or China. And in China, they make it really good. We'll pay for the factory. We'll give you inexpensive labor. You don't have to worry about environmental problems here or workmen's compensation or health insurance, none of that. So when it used to cost $35 to make a bike in the United States that can be sold retail for $65, so the retail outlet and the manufacturer all made a profit. Now, we'll make that bike in China, ship it in a cargo container over the United States for $15. You can now sell it for $30. You can actually retail it for less than what it would cost to manufacture. Then you destroy all competition. Like when Whole Foods opens up, every small health food store within, let's say, a mile is threatened with going broke because they can't compete against that giant. And you do think maybe the average person would say, well, shouldn't I support something that's been here for 100 years? But that's a separate topic about a lack of mindfulness or care. Interesting to see people who once worked in a factory making a living wage now going to one of the box stores to buy the item that they used to manufacture. No irony there. And of course, when all this started around Ronald Reagan's time, but it was really, who was the single most person pushing all this? Bill and Hillary Clinton. Yep, I can track it all and have. So then one day you wake up and all the major corporations are now monopolies because they bought up the competition, closed them down. Whole Foods bought Wild Oats, 400 stores, and closed them all so Mackey could have control. And he did. Smart move business-wise, not good for all the people that worked or shop in those stores. Buy up your competition and close it. When Barack Obama, and he also was a big sponsor of this, outsourcing of jobs, and yet they all would turn right around and lie to your face. And the trouble is a lot of people believed it. Oh, trust us, NAFTA is good. NAFTA was terrible, but the union sold out. Not the rank and file, the people controlling the unions. So often, so many of them are just so politically connected to the corporate state. And anyhow, that's what happened. And we saw thousands upon thousands of businesses going broke. That's what caused the Great Rust Belt. That's what caused major cities like Camden, New Jersey, Compton, and Detroit, and all these other places by the thousands of communities to go into this bad industrial winter that we were barely able to come out of, and many communities didn't at all. So why don't you then do the smart thing? Why don't you have a government program, not this stupid one they're promoting now that will only help those smart enough to realize the money's going to go to them, not to you. Mark my words, 5 years from now, ask yourself, where were those bridges? Where were those tunnels? Where the, forget about it. You're being hustled again. I hope that one day you wake up and realize how you're being hustled. But if you really wanted to help bring America back, then you would sponsor zero interest loans with no payment for 3 years. The same deal you gave, $23 trillion you gave during the Obama-Bush bailout, and you give that now. You give that to small businesses with the provision that for every $1 million of a loan they receive, they have to hire 2 people at a living wage, not minimum wage, with health benefits. And that way you rebuild communities. And you give that out in every community in the United States to those who would qualify. And you have local people who have been in business there sit on panels to help bring people in and review what they're doing to see if they can give input. Is it likely to succeed or fail? And that way you have local communities working with each other to grow back a business base that would employ people at living wages and support them so they weren't strangulated by equity partners taking away their jobs and by being overextended on debt. It's not that difficult. It could work, but it won't be done because that's not where the money is. So that's why we have people today just buying up everything they can. We have monopolies. Everywhere you look, there's nothing but monopolies. And we don't have the power the unions once had. In 1881, the Federation of Organized Trade and Labor Unions was formed. In 1882, the first Labor Day parade was held in New York City. In 1886, the American Federation of Labor was founded. One of the leaders of this whole movement was a man named Samuel Gompers, G-O-M-P-E-R-S. He was a British-born American He founded the American Federation of Labor, the AFL, and served as the organization's president until his death in 1924. He promoted harmony among the different craft unions that comprised the AFL. He promoted collective bargaining. He secured shorter hours and higher wages. He also encouraged the AFL to take political action to elect their friends and defeat their enemies. He mostly supported Democrats, but sometimes Republicans. In 1903, the Women's Trade Union League formed at the AFL convention. In 1905, the Industrial Workers of the World founded. In 1924, Samuel Gompers dies, and William Green becomes AFL president. In 1935, the Committee for Industrial Organization, the CIO, was formed within the AFL. In 1936, the AFL and the CIO created a nonpartisan league and helped President Roosevelt win re-election to a second term. In 1938, the Congress of Industrial Organization, the CIO, forms an independent federation. John F. L. Lewis was president. John L. Lewis, by the way, served as president of the, and later part of the founding of the CIO, which established the United Steelworkers of America and helped organize millions of other industrial workers in the 1930s during the Great Depression. Lewis was a Republican, but he played a major role in helping Democrat Franklin D. Roosevelt win a landslide victory for the U.S. presidency in 1936. In 1938, the Fair Labor Standard Act established wage and hour division of the Department of Labor. In 1940, John L. Lewis resigns and Philip Murphy becomes CIO president. 1943, the CIO forms the first political action committee to get the union votes for President Roosevelt. In 1941, A. Philip Randolph threatens a march on Washington to protest racial discrimination in defense jobs. In 1945, Frances Perkins ends her long tenure as Secretary of Labor, leaving behind a legacy that reduced workplace accidents, created laws against child labor, and expanded workers' rights. In 1946, the largest strike wave in U.S. history. In 1947, the Taft-Hartley Act restricts union members' activities. In 1949, the child labor is finally prohibited through an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act, and previous attempts had not been successful. In 1955, the AFL and the CIO merge. George Meany was president. By the way, George Meany was a key figure in the creation of the AFL-CIO and served as the AFL-CIO's first president from 1955 to 79. Meany was consistent in his opposition to corruption in the labor movement and was one of the best-known labor union leaders in the United States in the mid-20th century. And then Jimmy Hoffa comes along. Of course, he was corrupt, but he united the laundry workers, and there was a lot that went on from 1957 right up till the current day. I'm just giving you a brief oversight of where it all began. You know, in 1972, you had the Coalition of Black Trade Unions formed. In 1970, you had the Occupational Safety and Health passed. In 1973, you had the Labor Council of Latin American Advancement founded. 1974, the Coalition of Labor Union Women founded. 1974, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. In 1975, Cesar Chavez and 60 supporters of the UFW embarked on a 1,000-mile march across California to rally the state's farm workers. In 1981, the AFL rallies 400,000 in Washington on Solidarity Day. 1990, the United Steelworkers of America Labor Alliance created within the AFL-CIO. So you have all these movements. Now what's happened today? We went from about 50 to 51% of Americans unionized, and we had the best quality of life in American history for the average person. It was the unions and the honest union leaders who did that. And now we're under 10%. And corporate America has control over Congress, and Congress does the service to them, not to the average person. Just want to share that. So when you take into account that everything was based upon creating debt, and today we have over $200 trillion in debt. We are almost 1,100%, 903% to be exact, with unfunded entitlements in debt compared to gross domestic product. We are bankrupt. Corporate America is in debt. The states, the cities are in debt. Federal government's in debt. Credit card debt, mortgage debt, car debt, student loan debt. We have all this debt. And yet somehow we're lying to ourselves, saying we're thriving. We are not. Those who can exploit all this, who have monopolies, who can control debt and control message, they're thriving. Everyone else is not. Don't buy into their lies. I just wanted to give you a little history of how we got here. So the greed is good, and greed is necessary. How much greed is necessary to get Bill Gates to acknowledge he's got enough? There's not enough in the universe. Now we're going to go to a video. Now, I'm going to tell you in advance, this is a video that is, you got to watch it. You got to listen carefully. If you can't watch it, go to prn.fm, scroll down, Gary's notes. You can watch it. This is a highly regarded person. This is an MD, a professor, and he is involved in the government statistics. He's showing you the truth of a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled study of a placebo versus ivermectin. And the end of it is ivermectin wins out on all measurements, all indices, ivermectin works. And that's just one of dozens of studies we have. But this is one of the world's leading authorities on the subject. So now you've got your evidence to go up against the opinion of all the people who don't want you taking ivermectin, because it will hopefully keep you in their minds, don't take ivermectin or anything else. Don't even stay healthy. Don't eat right. Don't exercise. Stay at home. Wear your mask. Quarantine. Don't question anything. Be a good citizen and everything will be fine. Well, and we know that's a lie. Now you have the proof. Let's go to the tape.
Your research that you did was double-blinded. Patients were given a placebo or non-placebo. There haven't been any other real studies relating to like that.
I think it's the first one. My feeling is it's really the first one to do in the proper way. And I'm going to show you.
Please, the floor is yours.
Okay, so I mean, the ivermectin story, it's really become a project, and we have few other items that I'm not going to discuss it this evening. So our study was ivermectin versus placebo. And again, we looked at the mild cases, non-hospitalized patient, and it was double-blind randomized controlled trial. And later on, I will tell more about the looking into this type of patient, because people may ask, well, why we have to bother ourselves with patients who are already diagnosed as having mild disease. So just to go quickly, it got the IRB, the Helsinki approval by the Shiba Institute, by the Minister of Health, and it's also registered in the NIH, in the clinicaltrials.gov, and you can see here the number. The objectives of our study was reduction of viral shedding among mild to moderate COVID patients. So it's usually the beginning of the disease where they are not severe, not hospitalized, good oxygenation, and to see whether in these people we can shorten the viral shedding. The other part was to evaluate the effect of ivermectin in preventing progression of this mild disease to a severe disease. I can tell you now that the sample size, and I mean, all this was decided at the beginning of the outbreak. I'm talking about March of 2020. So many aspects we learned later on, and also that only small fraction of the people are progressing into severe disease, and therefore we cannot answer the second question. So the study design was to go to community, and in Israel we have dedicated hotels that people who cannot be, people diagnosed with corona and cannot stay at home, they are moving to hotels, and we thought that because they are concentrated together, from the manpower point of view, it would be much easier to reach them in the hotel instead of running one by one to different houses around Israel. And we took all adult people above 18 years old, and pregnant women were excluded. Now, because we were looking for viral shedding, people with asymptomatic disease also were included, because we will follow them, as you will see, by nasal swab to see whether the virus disappeared or not. So the intervention was either giving ivermectin, and we have to remember that ivermectin is given according to body weight, or to give them a placebo. We decided to go more or less to the usual dose. Dose per day is usually 0.2 mg per kg. And usually for parasitic disease, we give it for 1 day. We decided here to increase the dose and to give it for 3 days. And therefore we split the group to people up less than 70 kilo and people more than 70 kilo, and they got 12 milligram to 15 milligram again for 3 days. It was double blind, and the placebo was done in the same, it looked the same as the ivermectin. So it was really completely blinded for all sides. Now the follow-up was to go and to do every 2 days to do nasal swab and actually to follow and to see who is going to be negative earlier, the placebo or ivermectin, or maybe there's no any difference. The primary endpoint was to see what's going on at day six from the intervention. The sample size that we found was about 50 patients per each arm, so it's altogether about 100 patients, and this we were looking for 25 decrease in the timing of between the two groups until coming negative. Actually, what's happened that final recruitment was even more, 116, but because we have quite high of dropout, you see 22 had to be dropped out because they came to the hotel at the end of the disease, so were almost negative or negative, and we could not look after them. And therefore, at the final numbers, we got ivermectin 49 and placebo 45. So just to show you, when we looked at the patient characteristic, we see that there's a small difference in the numbers we mentioned between ivermectin group and placebo, but all other parameters, the age, the number of risk factors, gender, weight, and weight is important because again, this drug is given by weight. The percentage of asymptomatic people, patients, or the recruitment altogether, the recruitment CT level. CT level means, I'm not sure again how many people are familiar with the term here, but it means the number of cycles that you have to do until you find the virus. And if you have high cycle, that means you have a very low viral load. So we see that, you don't see it here, but the level of CT level at recruitment was quite similar in the same in both groups. We tried to get them as soon as possible after the initial symptom. However, especially at the beginning of the pandemic in Israel, it took time until patients decided to go and to be checked. It took time until they got the results. So finally, we managed to get them around the median time, 4 days from the beginning of the symptoms. Now let's go to the results. If you see, these are the mean CT level every 2 days that we follow them. Just to remind you again that when you have high CT level, it's good. It's mean the patient is going to be negative quite soon. So you can see what I dropped here is, and this is the beginning symptom onset. We have about 4 days until they were enrolled. And then we started to see, they started almost the same point. And we see that with the ivermectin, they become high CT level. Again, means low viral load much more quickly. And here, this is the placebo arm. But you see that around the 10 days from symptom onset, they are becoming quite equal. And that's make the also more complicated the follow-up of all this type of trial. If you know, or if you familiar, in most countries of the world, the policy today is that after 10 days from symptom onset, you can be out of isolation. And why? What's the point? The point is that usually after 10 days, even without any treatment, you become negative, or to say it more precisely, you are non-infectious. So you see here, people are in a CT level above 30, which considered to be non-infectious. So just to show you that if you need to find advantage, it should be at the early stage of the disease. So if you go and see now, what's the percentage of people who become negative or non-infectious at day 4, 6, 8, and 10, you can see that in the ivermectin, on day 4, 57% become negative compared to only 31 in the placebo group. And because the numbers are smaller, the sample size here, the p-value is almost significant. However, from day 6, which actually was the primary outcome, we see that it's highly significant that more people in the ivermectin group become negative, much more than the placebo group. And it continues to day 8 and to, 10, and later on it will diminish, as we mentioned, because even the placebo without any treatment, they become healthy. So this one way to show that ivermectin really has an impact on the viral shedding. In multivariable logistic regression model, we can see that taking into account the gender, the age, weight, and whether patients have had symptoms or not, we see that ivermectin, the odds ratio of ivermectin to get the patient negatively at day 6, it's more than 3 times compared to placebo. So it's really highly significant that with the ivermectin, you can reduce the viral load and patient become much more quickly become negative or less infection, non-infectious. And this—
okay, there you have it. You can watch the entire one, download it, and share it with others, because this supersedes all of the pundits, the medical doctors who have not done the studies. This is a double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized study by one of the leading scientists and medical doctors specializing in the coronavirus treatment in Israel. So now we have, and by the way, that's only one of many studies we put up today on ivermectin. They've been lying about ivermectin. The question is, what is their motive? Why don't they want you to use it early on? And it's not the horse serum. It's a pill. Comes in 3 milligrams, 6 milligrams, 12 milligrams. And if you're at risk and you're taking it daily, along with the rest of the protocol, you could save lives. And he showed that in some cases, up to 80%, and other studies have shown 85%. So just imagine we've had 700,000 more or less people die in the United States. What if we could have saved 85% of those people? Those people wouldn't be dead today. Is that worth challenging Anthony Fauci? You bet it is. And by the way, here's something new. And this is, we want to thank Jordan Schachtel for this. System of corruption, quote, the revolving door. All three FDA-authorized COVID shot companies now employ former FDA commissioners. So, quote, have an experimental drug that needs rapid authorization from the FDA in order to be sold to the masses, look to siphon billions of dollars from the U.S. taxpayer for your newfound pharmaceutical product. In today's America, you can buy yourself a former FDA commissioner and use the public sector, private sector revolving door system of corruption to impose your will on the American public and make a windfall for your executives and shareholders in the process. That appears to be the exact strategy utilized by Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and the company that founded Moderna, which have rostered a series of former top-ranking government officials into top positions in their respective organizations. Then it goes through former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, the ultimate personification of a revolving door mechanism, sits on the board of Pfizer. The frequent Pfizer sponsor, CNBC guest, also maintains several thousand shares of Pfizer stock and he is compensated well into the six figures for an annual on an annual basis. Gottlieb earned millions from his continually increasing board appointments to a plethora of pharmaceutical and healthcare companies. Stephen Hahn, and it goes on. Why isn't none of this mentioned in the mainstream media? Talk back now, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. You have a lot to think about, the fact that we can prove absolutely unequivocally with hundreds of studies. And by the way, the argument is, well, these aren't FDA-approved studies. That's the last thing you would expect. The FDA doesn't approve good studies. It approves studies based upon who sits on its board, who its advisors are. That's how the system works. There's no other way to explain this. All right? No other way to explain it. Greed. And that's why I gave you the background of how we got to where everything in American commerce is based upon greed, not the need of a product or service, not the benefit to the economy or the ecology. No, or it's just about greed, nothing more. So if you know where we were and you know where we are, then that should give you a really good understanding of where we're going. They intend to make you nothing more than a controllable commodity, to exploit you to the degree they can, and they will, and they have. Just preventing you from knowing about vitamin D and vitamin C and quercetin and acetylcysteine and glutathione, all of which should be in our preventative COVID protocols, preventative disease protocols. Not a word. Losing weight, not a word. Exercising, not a word. Meditation, not a word. That would help you during this stressful time, not a word. The vaccine, oh, that's it. That's it. But it's not working. In fact, I'll give you one example of this. Just look at the actual studies around the world. This is the latest study. Quote, study finds COVID-19 vaccines do not work after vaccinated patients sparked hospital outbreak among fully vaccinated, leaving many in a critical condition whilst the unvaccinated were fine. Quote, a paper published September 30th in Eurosurveillance raises questions about the legitimacy of vaccine-generated herd immunity. The study cited a COVID-19 outbreak which spread rapidly among hospital staff and an Israeli medical center. Despite a 96% vaccination rate, use of N95 surgical masks by patients, and full personal protective equipment worn by providers, the calculated rate of infection among all exposed patients and staff was 10.6% for staff and 23.7% for patients in a population that was 96% vaccinated. And the paper noted several transmissions likely occurred between two individuals, both wearing surgical masks, and in one instance using full PPE, including N95 masks, face shields, gowns, and gloves. And of the 42 cases diagnosed within the outbreak, 38 were fully vaccinated in two doses, with two doses of Pfizer's RNA vaccine. One received only one. Of the uninfected, 23% patients and 19 were staff members. The staff all recovered quickly. Okay, so the unvaccinated actually did better than the vaccinated. It also shows you the fallacy of herd statistics. By the way, tonight, 7 o'clock, the whole hour, Zach Voorhees, a former senior software engineer at YouTube and Google, he's going to talk about Google's covert operations to undermine democracy, freedom of speech, and manipulate our lives. That's tonight. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.